Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Friday, May the 1st. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, the Reform UK leader of Kent County Council reflects on their first year in charge.
The learning curve was enormous. I mean, I'd had no experience in local government prior to becoming leader of the largest local authority in the country. But luckily, there are two qualities about me that have helped me through all my life, really. One is that I love a challenge, and two is that I'm a very, very fast learner.
It's going to be a very busy weekend in Rochester as the Sweeps Festival takes place.
There's something to do, something to see, something to enjoy for all groups and ages. So, yeah, we're really excited to welcome visitors from near and far once again. Last year, we had over 60,000 visitors come for the Sweeps Festival.
And Gillingham play their final game of the season.
It's been a poor season, but we can definitely sign off with a positive note. And hopefully next season will be a lot more positive than this one.
But first, on today's episode, three teenagers who killed a man on a Sheppey beach are starting a total of 19 years in custody. The group attacked Alexander Cashford 2 days after he'd met one of them by chance in an arcade in Laysdown last August. They accused the 49-year-old from Raynham of being a paedophile. He was then hit with a bottle and pelted with rocks. Well, a 16-year-old boy had admitted manslaughter, while another boy who's 15 and a 16-year-old girl were convicted of the same offence following a trial. They were sentenced by Judge Mrs. Justice Chima Grubb.
You will each serve one half and then be released on licence. The time you've already spent will count. I'm sure that you'll be given the date of your release very soon after today. And I want to make one further observation which I hope you will remember. You are all young. And you will still be young when you rejoin society. You did a terrible thing, and you are each paying a price for it. But there is great potential for each of you to live a good and fulfilling life when you are released. It's up to you to choose how you will live.
Kent Online News.
A Higham woman who crashed her car into another vehicle while driving on the wrong side of the M25 has avoided prison. Charlotte Mayer Maloney travelled north on the southbound carriageway near Sevenoaks on New Year's Day. The 52-year-old from Dombey Close was given a suspended sentence and a 3-year driving ban. A man who carried out a sex attack in Ramsgate has been sent to prison. A court was told how Oscar Love had targeted his victim on the high street in June last year. The 32-year-old from Chatham Place has also been convicted of controlling behaviour. He's been locked up for 13 years. An elderly man from Tunbridge Wells has been jailed for more than 20 years after being found guilty of child sex offences. A court was told Michael Merrin's offending happened between 2002 and 2014. The 80-year-old from Hallshole Road was described by police as predatory. Now, the chair of South East Water has resigned as a group of MPs say they have no confidence in the company's leaders. Chris Trains stepped down following a damning report by the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee. It follows a series of outages impacting thousands of Kent customers between November and January. Well, let's get reaction now from Tunbridge Wells MP Mike Martin. His constituents have been affected by those outages and he's previously called for Chief Exec David Hinton to quit.
Chris Trains has done the right thing. I think for a long time, no one's taken any kind of accountability in South East Water. But what we need to see now, because it's not just at board level, it's also the CEO, Dave Hinton, what we need to see now is the investors step in and ensure an orderly transition of leadership. We really need to clear out all of them, I'm afraid.
Is it one down and a few more to go? You would like to see more announcements today, would you?
Well, absolutely. And I think also we don't want them all to just up sticks and leave. We need the investors to come in and get a grip of this and make sure that we actually have a plan to transition to new leadership to make sure that the customers right across the southeast, but particularly my constituents in Tunbridge Wells, get the water that they deserve. I mean, we just want to turn on the taps and water to come out.
We mentioned when we spoke yesterday, it's pretty unprecedented for the EFRA committee to say that they didn't believe in the leadership. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No, and I think, you know, with these parliamentary committees, normally they're so carefully worded, you have to read between the lines and try and figure out what they're trying to say. But actually, this report yesterday, they said that South East Water leadership was an unaccountable clique riddled with groupthink, making poor decisions and letting down their customers, failing in their basic legal duties. I mean, it could not have been more hard-hitting. It was devastating. And I think, you know, the game's up, really. The Drinking Water Inspectorate, Ofwat, the Secretary of State also says she's probably going to call in the investors, the Select Committee. I mean, everyone is saying the same thing. The leadership has to change.
Any idea where David Hinton is today? Do you think he's at his desk as normal?
Oh, well, we could play the game that we normally play when the water goes off, couldn't we? And play Where is Dave? I know that you, during the last crisis, tried to find him. Good luck. I support you, but he's probably gone to ground again.
You mentioned there about what happens next, because you know, if there is a clear out of the top leadership team, who on earth is going to want to come in and take on South East Water? It must feel like a bit of a poison chalice, really.
Well, I think there are huge problems at the firm, and it's not just about getting the investment in, making sure that things like Pembrey Water Treatment Works in my constituency are up to scratch. It's also about changing the culture of the organisation so they're able to adequately assess risk and they're able to, you know, break out of that groupthink and make good decisions about where to lay their investment. And you know what? There are leaders who love taking on challenges like that. You know, if I was an MP, that's the sort of thing that I'd be like really interested in doing, right? It's a big people problem. It's a big challenge to change the culture, get the investment in, inspire investors to give you money to go and sort out the water network. People will take that on. There are good people who are able to do that. It's just that the current leadership are not leaders. They're sitting in positions of leadership and they're not leading, which is why they've got to go.
Kent Online reports.
There's been a huge emergency response following a fire at a terraced house in Chatham. Five fire engines, police and paramedics were called to the A2 Raynham Road yesterday afternoon. Crews managed to stop it spreading and used a high-pressure fan to clear the property of smoke. We're told no one was hurt, but it's unclear how the blaze started. On-the-spot fines to try and tackle antisocial behaviour on part of the Kent coast are going to be replaced with signs instead. A public spaces protection order covering Whitstable and Herne Bay expired last month. Canterbury City Council has now decided to try an education approach by putting signage on the shoreline encouraging people to act responsibly. Now, next on today's episode, the leader of Kent County Council says the learning curve has been enormous after Reform UK took control of the authority. It's been exactly a year since we voted in local elections. Lyndon Kim-Karens admitted there have been a few bumps to get over, but says she's proud of her work to bring down long-term debt. She's been reflecting on her first year in power to Ollie Leader from the local Democracy Reporting Service.
Well, it's been extraordinary. I mean, what a year we had. It started with that moment of history on May the 1st last year. On May the 2nd, we got the result. Then we took control of Kent County Council and we hit the ground running. And, you know, we've had a few bumpy things to get over, but it's been an incredible journey so far.
How did it feel to become leader? Did you expect to be in the running when you signed up to become a councillor during the campaign trail?
No. Absolutely not. I can say hand on heart, I never lay in bed as a little girl dreaming of the day I might one day become leader of Kent County Council. That never happened. It was never in a plan. I didn't have a plan. I literally wanted to join Reform because I could see that the country badly needed change and it needed to be run by people who had a different outlook from the current incumbents. So I joined Reform, I got asked to put myself forward as a candidate, so I said yes. And then I got asked to put myself forward to be leader, so I said yes. So all I've done is say yes to opportunities that have come along.
From your perspective, obviously, it's one thing becoming Kent County Council, another thing leading one of the largest local authorities in the country. What was the learning curve like for you?
Well, the learning curve was enormous. I mean, I'd had no experience in local government prior to becoming leader of the largest local authority in the country. But luckily, there are two qualities about me that have helped me through all my life, really. One is that I love a challenge, and two is that I'm a very, very fast learner. So I was able to apply both of those qualities to becoming leader of Kent County Council.
Well, what do you think you've achieved in the best possible way for residents?
That's quite a difficult question to answer because there are many, many things I'm very proud that we've achieved in just a year under the most incredible scrutiny and under the most negative cloud of publicity that you could imagine. But I think that there's probably three things. The first one is getting the adult social care budget back under control, because what we inherited was frightening. We didn't get the first figures until August. We'd been elected in May. We got the first figures in August. And it showed that if things carried on the way they were, we were heading for an £80 million overspend. That's the kind of thing that can sink a council. So we had to get that under control. And I'm glad to say that we have. The second thing is getting £67 million wiped off the long-term debt. We inherited a debt of £732 million. That was costing £84,000 a day in interest payments alone. We've got that right down because we've done some clever management of the books. And the third thing is, I think we've started to change the very culture of Kent County Council. We imposed a no borrowing rule. We've introduced a commercial strategy. In short, we've ensured that every single member of staff that works for Kent County Council now comes into work with a determination to get best value for every single penny of taxpayer money spent. So those are what I would say are my three biggest achievements.
Kent Online reports.
Now, if you head to Kent Online or follow us on socials, you can get a first glimpse inside a Kent pub more than 3 years after it was devastated in a fire. The Dirty Habit in Hollingbourne has been closed since the blaze broke out in October 2022. Extensive work has taken place on the Grade 2 listed building. It's due to reopen next week. Next today, a Kent homelessness charity is welcoming the new Renters' Rights Act, which has come into force today. It gives private tenants a lot more protection and bans so-called no-fault evictions. Well, Tom Newmark is the chief executive of Porchlight, which is based in Canterbury. He's been speaking to Lucy.
Overall, we think this is a positive step. We're glad renters are being given more protections and security, especially around the ending of so-called no-fault evictions. Because sadly, in the past, we have seen a small number of landlords who have abused these to remove tenants, which creates the experience of homelessness, something that we then have to support people through and can be quite a traumatic experience. So that is going to be ended, which is a welcome step.
Yeah, absolutely. But there are some potential issues this could create as well, isn't there?
Yes, we are a bit concerned that it will mean landlords are even more restrictive on who they take on as tenants if they're if they feel like the risk is increased with tenants. So they may increase the amount that they turn people away. We already see a degree of discrimination against people who've experienced homelessness, where they're turned away, even if, for example, they have the income to pay for their rent on the basis of their history. We are a bit concerned that that might continue.
And the stigma around homelessness, I mean, how does that kind of present itself when someone's applying for housing after perhaps coming out of the charity supported accommodation? What kind of barriers are they facing?
I mean, people will be told to their face, sorry, we just filled it this morning, knowing full well that that's not been the case. It's very, very rare that people will out and out say directly, it's because you've experienced homelessness that you're not getting this home. But it can be a fairly consistent pattern. What we do is we build up relationships with local landlords so that they know if there's someone coming who's been supported by Porchlight, we're recommending them. That goes a long way to easing people's concerns, and we're able to do that partnership approach. But unfortunately, if people are left to their own devices, they are often turned away, or they'll turn up and they'll say, oh, the viewing's been cancelled, when you can see it hasn't really. And it's just because people are judging people for their experiences.
The family of a Kent teenager who suffered a cardiac arrest at a park in Ashford 2 years ago say she's making good steps with her recovery, but is still unable to communicate properly. Ruby Boyton collapsed at Bridgefield Park and her brain was starved of oxygen for 31 minutes. She's about to turn 18 and is now able to have oxygen therapy in a bid to improve her health. Got some What's On stories for you now. Rochester is set to welcome thousands of visitors this weekend for the annual Sweeps Festival. It's one of the largest May Day festival celebrations of its kind, and we'll see Morris dancers and groups from around the world performing in the High Street. I've been chatting to Councillor Nina Gurung from Medway Council.
Once again, our historic Rochester is going to be filled with colour, joy, laughter, so much fun to be had by everybody. Basically, it is a family-friendly event, and there's something to do, something to see, something to enjoy for all groups and ages. So yeah, we're really excited to welcome visitors from near and far once again. Last year, we had over 60,000 visitors come for the Sweeps Festival. Once again, we're like I already know that, the Morris dancers, the folk musicians, they're going to fill the streets. We're also going to have pretending people, theater group. We have lots of trails for our children as well at Eastgate House, as well as Guildhall Museum. And this time, we're also going to have musicians fill the rooms at the Corn Exchange and as well as Guildhall Museum. So there's and even at the castle grounds as well, there's going to be plenty of things for people to do, including there's also for children and families. There are rides as well as, food stalls. And on the third day of the festival this year, there's going to be a start in the morning with international folk sort of presentations from different countries, including Bulgaria, India, Nepal, and Ireland, and Slovakia. And yeah, so there's so much going on, really.
So it's really got global appeal this year. And as you say, thousands of people will be coming down. But how important is it for the local economy as well? All those independent shops and businesses in Rochester that will benefit over the next 3 days. It's a real boost for them, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we actually do this partly also to support our local economy. And I know just like us, months in preparation for these sort of huge events in Medway, they also in turn, prepare months in advance for the big footfall, one of the biggest footfall in the calendar year. And yes, we have fantastic array and perhaps the biggest concentration of beautiful sort of independent shops, cafes, restaurants, pubs. So I think there's so much our independent shops also have to offer in terms of the experience for visitors. And no wonder it is such a favorite, firm favorite for so many people that come year after year.
There's going to be a park and ride service from the uni campus at Chatham Maritime, while buses in the towns will also be free over the weekend. Plus, Jetstream tours return as well. They'll be running cruises along the River Medway from Limehouse Landing. And a walk among the bluebells in Horling is also taking place this weekend in memory of a little girl who died from a brain tumour. 7-year-old Sophia LeBrun Healy passed away in March last year after being diagnosed in November 2023. Bluebells were her favourite flower, and a charity set up in her honour is raising money for a play area for the local community. Sophia's mum, Alice, has been telling me more about it.
Our initial aim for the Bluebell Circle, and it kind of started as a group of parents from the school who wanted to do something for us as parents. But they wanted to find out from us what we really wanted. And after a few months, we said, we do want to be involved, and actually, we want to put something by the river. And that quickly spiraled to become our phase one of our project, which is a beautiful throne, carved throne chair. That part of the project is almost complete. We are having our opening party on June the 7th. So we've got that in our calendar now for June the 7th, 12 till 3 down at Horling Riverside. And that was is our first idea. The second idea is to create a community garden for phase two around that project. The area is historical, it's beautiful, it's nestled by the river, but it does need a bit of maintenance, if I'm honest.
You obviously need to raise quite a lot of money, but it would
Yes.
benefit the community hugely, wouldn't it? And presumably for you, it would be a lovely space where you could go. You're going to remember Sophia every day anyway, but it's somewhere special that you could go to remember her and know that that had been done in her memory.
Definitely. That area is perfect for our community in Horling, of course. Our children, people that walk there every day with their dogs, that will be a beautiful area for them to sit, of course. We also get people come from around the area because it is a lovely river walk. It's a hidden gem here in Kent and in Medway, particularly in Medway, it's a real hidden gem by the river. So we're really hopeful that that garden not only will bring our community together, it'll bring other people in. And I must mention really what this has become. This project has become about young people, really. We didn't know that would happen, by the way. We thought it would be about honouring Sophia, and it definitely is that. That's the heart of it. But a bit's on the outside. It's about giving young people a chance to be part of something. And we've noticed that. We are attracting so many young people who want to do something extraordinary. And I think that is really special. And they'll be able to see that garden once it's done and say, you know, I was a part of that.
The walk on Sunday will start at Moot Brewery with registration from 2 p.m.
Kent Online Sports.
Football now, and it's Gillingham's final game of the season this weekend. They're welcoming Shrewsbury Town to Priestfield tomorrow. The Gills will be playing for pride after a disappointing campaign which sees them currently 18th in League Two. Well, manager Gareth Ainsworth has been speaking to the club's media team.
Gaffer, last game of the season is upon us here at Priestfield. We welcome your former club, Shrewsbury Town, to ME7. How determined are you and the group to sign off with maximum points?
Really determined. We want to win this. You know, I want to send the fans on who followed us all season and come here all season with some positivity. And it's been a challenging season, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, people know that. Everyone knows that for one reason or another. And what we've gone through has been really tough. And it hasn't been good enough. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and try and say that that's good enough, that it hasn't been good enough. But we give our best, and that's what we, you know, we're here to do. But yeah, I'm going to sit here and say it's been a poor season, but we can definitely sign off with a positive note, and hopefully next season will be a lot more positive than this one.
I gather there'll be a good crowd on Saturday. Shrewsbury are bringing, I think, 4 or 5, maybe even 600. It's your former club. Does that add a touch of spice?
No, they're good fans. You know, they travel well. They've had a resurgence of form, you know, since the new manager came in, and obviously they were stuck in some dodgy form at the start of the season, but yeah, they finished well, so we know we'll have a tough game. Yeah, the fans coming down, you know, they're a great bunch. When I was there, they got right behind us, and obviously coming down to support their team, you know, which is the last day of the season, which is brilliant. You know, it's very similar to us taking a lot to Barnet last week. You know, these last away games always seem to attract a good travel, you know, and that's great. It's great because the atmosphere will be good. I want to sign off with a win, and hopefully we can get that.
One person I'm sure equally determined as you are is Sam Vokes. He's announced his retirement as of Saturday evening. In your programme notes, you've mentioned he's one of the best professionals that you've ever worked with. Talk to us about Vokes.
Just for somebody to have achieved what he's achieved in the game is a rarity. You know, you think about the millions of people who want to be footballers and the small percentage who make it as footballers, and then to go on and play in the Premier League and score the goals he did, and to the international recognition he got, that percentage becomes tiny, tiny. Not many people do what Sam Vokes has done in his career, and an absolute legend of the game, you know. I think by some of the posts by the players that he's played against, I don't do social media, but I've been told that there's been some big names saying, you know, had some good battles in the past, and some real big names, you know. So I think Harry Maguire is one of them. So, you know, to be in that esteemed company of people who play at the top level, play for their countries, and not just that, the person that he is. What an unbelievable guy. And if anyone wants to play for anything on Saturday, play for Sam Vokes.
And in cricket, Kent are still looking for their first win of the season as they head into their next championship game of the season. They're taking on Derbyshire at Canterbury. It follows a defeat to Worcestershire last time out. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. Don't forget, if you're on the site today, you can check out the latest review from our secret drinker. Hope you have a fantastic bank holiday weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Tuesday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.